then my friends were like, you need to get it together, Amber. Like, this guy's great. He's giving all the green flags. He's wonderful. He's a good dad. He's got a good job. He's decently good looking. He's everything on paper. Give him a chance. And I'm like, okay, I'll give him a chance. And then next thing I knew, I was completely addicted to this love bombing. He faked cancer with me. He faked cancer with her. He cheated multiple times. He cheated multiple times with her. Like, I'm going to kill myself if you leave. Yes, I'm going to kill myself if you leave. Literally exact playbook. I look at people and I was like, please don't compare what you have with what I went through, because you're still being abused. You're being financially abused. You're being controlled. Don't think he has to be Brandon level before you leave. We've had a few people email and say, I watched your docuseries and I broke up with someone that had been toxic and abusive to me. And that was like that trigger of, I don't want to end up how Rachel ended up in that docuseries. You have to kind of tune out the ones that aren't really the target demographic anyways of the story. I can't, there's so many people like fake extensions, fake this, fake that. Like, they want to focus on our appearance more than the story. And that was disappointing. But then you think,
I'm like, well, I like my extensions. I'm so mean, yeah, I'm
information. Like, why does that bother you? The minute you put some lipstick on and
the minute you look hot,
highlights, whoo.
Oh no, highlights, red lipstick, a little bit of cleavage. Well, then you're a whore.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, no, I have learned the art form, and it's an art form. To eviscerate while being polite. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't have to go for the big jab, because I'll make you bleed out with pleases and thank yous. And then until my therapist said, Michelle, out of all the couples I've dealt with over my career, he said, you and your ex have the second most toxic relationship I've ever seen. He's like, and the first most toxic relationship, they stabbed each other. The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love Less Law. Today, we have the great pleasure of having Amber Rasmussen with us. She is a storyteller, podcast host, and global communications professional known for her work in true crime and spiritual storytelling. She co-hosts Ex-Wives Undercover, Liars, Cheaters, and Love Cons with Athena Klingerman, where they share their real-life experience of being deceived by con artist Brandon Johnson, a story that has also inspired the Don't Date Brandon docuseries. She also hosts Next Realm, exploring themes of spirituality, loss, and healing. Amber uses her platform to raise awareness about emotional abuse and empowers others to rebuild after betrayal. Amber, it's great to see you again.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
Well, what made you decide to do this again with us? Because we did, what, Love Less Fridays, Jake?
We did. All three of us go way back, though, from Strictly Stalking. You both were guests on the show.
You came back, fortunately for us.
You just can't shake me. It's just, I'm just one of those people.
Keep coming back for more.
That's right.
Why don't you tell our listeners about you?
I grew up in Portland. Lived a pretty, traditional life. Parents still together, have an older sister. It's a good life, right?
Good family.
There's a little ups and downs here and there. Went to college at Oregon State. Started my
career. You're a duck?
No.
What's Oregon State?
Oregon State is the Beavers. Mm-hmm. A little controversy.
I'm just going to leave that there.
I started at U of O. I was a duck.
So you were a duck. Then you became a Beaver.
Yes. And there's all kinds of...
Oh,
I know Jake's about ready to laugh.
The reason I'm about ready to laugh is that Michelle is, again, the queen of double entendres.
Yes.
So the problem we have here with recording is you're going to mention something and you're going to see Michelle react like this, like prim and proper, and then kind of wink to me. And then I'm going to cut up laughing and have to mute myself. That's literally what we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's I like to keep Jake on his toes. And the problem is, for me, sometimes it comes out of left field. Like, no one really saw the squirrel coming. And then it's a really inappropriate double entendre that just makes him lose it. But from ducks to beavers.
I mean.
It's a good start today.
It is a good start for today. Let's see where the rest of the conversation takes us. But yeah. So did that. Living my best life. A little rocky in the dating world. Met my ex-husband. Which that was a whole left turn that I didn't see coming, and spent 5 years with him, divorced him, started a podcast, which you mentioned, XY's Undercover, put him in jail, saved a woman's life, made a docuseries. And now I am here on Love Less Law talking about that whole
You know,
journey.
That it kind of matches Love Less Law. You had the love. There was definitely lust. And then the law got involved and threw his ass in the pokey.
That's right. Yeah. His two were like partners that. Of the ex-wives coming together. He never thought that would happen.
Because Athena was his ex-wife as well, right?
First wife, yes. And ex-wife, yeah.
And ex-wife.
He did the whole, like, triangulations, keeping us apart. So he never thought we would compare stories and talk.
Isn't it fun when you bring out, like, the notepad and say, oh, let's compare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then your mouse on the floor just, like, what? What?
You're like, what?
But then everything, like, replays of, like, oh, my God, I missed that. Oh, my gosh. Like, while this was happening. And so...
Did your relationship with him overlap with Athena's relationship?
No, they got divorced in 2013, I believe. 2012, 2013. We met at the end of 2013. So there might have been about 9 months to a year.
Okay, but still it was relatively separate. But man, I'm guessing those journal entries were pretty similar. Was that accurate?
Like 100%.
He had the same game?
He faked cancer with me. He faked cancer with her. He cheated multiple times. He cheated multiple times with her. Like, I'm going to kill myself if you leave. Yes, I'm going to kill myself if you leave. Literally exact playbook.
The faking cancer. Like, there's a special place in hell for people that fake cancer. I mean, there really is. Like, that's inviting bad karma. Although, how long did he go to jail for?
Not enough. He took a plea deal. He'll be out next year, actually. It feels
so
like...
How many years has he served?
It'll be 5 total by the time he gets out. But he was supposed to be in there for 10. But, yeah.
He's in state jail, right?
Avenel,
I think. Yeah. So the difference for listeners is a general rule. State time, you do much less day for day time as opposed to your federal sentence. If the feds have you and you go away to federal prison time... You're going to do most of your time.
Oh, interesting.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
But state always has like 3 days or one good day equals, I don't even know. They give 2 for 1, 3 for 1. If you're a trustee in work, you get even more. But anyways, well, I guess 5 years you had peace.
Well, here's the kicker. I don't know if this is true. Maybe you can actually clear this up. He says he's studying to be a lawyer while he's in jail with his felonies.
I can't imagine what bar association would let a convicted felon as a licensed attorney. Now, if for some reason he was pardoned by the president, if he was somehow, I guess, but it was a state offense, so maybe not by the president, but in theory, be pardoned by the governor. And if it's pardoned, I think there's different between it commutes your sentence or your pardon. Pardon, you can go back to being whatever it was you were before. But if your sentence is commuted, you still have the conviction, but your time is done, so you can get out. So I guess it depends, but I would suspect he's not going to be able to go to law school.
So can he still study and he just can't get accepted into the bar? Is that what happens? Like he can still, because he's been taking courses and all this stuff. I'm like, oh, all right, well.
Typically, there's an ethics exam you have to take to become a lawyer. It's called the MPRE.
Okay.
And then in addition to the MPRE, you have to usually pass the state bar exam and or meet the requirements to, I guess, avoid having the law diploma before you can take it. I don't know. And there's usually some good character assessment. Like we go through, I know I got fingerprinted, went through background checks. Like we did it all. And in fact, I had a friend of mine who almost did not get the ability to remain in law school because she forgot to disclose an MIP that she had from high school.
Wow.
And she forgot to disclose it. And that almost prohibited her from becoming a lawyer in Texas. Now this was, I've been licensed for 24 years. So this was 26 years ago. So I don't know if the standards have changed, but I can't imagine.
I know. We're all like, interesting. We'll see how that plays out. But what a kick in the face to all the people he's harmed. If he can go out and then his whole spiel is he's going to represent men who have been victims of the fake Me Too movement is what he calls it. So I'm like, wow, if that happens, I just, I can't.
The fake Me Too movement. Well, mm-hmm. I guess he would know something about fake since he faked cancer.
He's king of faking everything. Yeah.
That could go a different direction as well, too.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Question for you. Do you feel like judges and lawyers are more in tune with narcissism and the tactics that happen? Because, well, I know when we went to court with our ex, it was terrifying. Judges are scary. They're so like, and I'm like, Your Honor, I'm like shaking. And it was like, I almost feel like the cowardly lion, like, whatever, like I was going to run back down the hall. I was so, so scared because I know what the truth is, but I'm like, does it come across? Do they understand what a psychopath he is? Like, I mean, I thought we were going to lose at certain points of like, oh my gosh, I know they have to follow the laws, but I'm like, I feel like this is just unraveling. And is it caught up to people who are making decisions or representing people like Brandon too?
So that's an interesting question for a lot of reasons. I think one, 20 years ago, probably not as sophisticated, but I don't think the general public was. And judges have to go through training just like everyone else. And they have mandatory judicial education hours every cycle. I mean, every state has them differently, but they all have continuing education hours. And I think there is a focus now more on mental health, the DSM-5, because a lot of cases can turn on someone's mental health. So I do think there is more awareness in the system as a whole. The problem that I see in some cases is that because there are so many different hearings on divorce cases, that you're only seeing a portion of the puzzle at each hearing. And so it's a little harder because the ones that are very sophisticated in what they do, you have to put together the puzzle for the court. You do. Mm-hmm. And when you're only having small hearings, like an hour here, an hour there, an hour, you're only dealing with the issue that's in front of the court at that moment. You're not dealing with the totality of the circumstances. And so it is easier to hide in those circumstances. But I do think that once they get to the full picture, and that's what I tell my clients, like, our job is to get the final trial if we can't settle it and put the full picture together for the court to see. And usually once you put the puzzle together, then the judges will see it. And sometimes it is so obvious that you don't need to put the puzzle together. You just need to put an exhibit sticker on someone's forehead. Mm-hmm. So I think the courts do the best they can with the training they have. As you know, we've got some judges that have been on the bench forever. They may be less susceptible to learning new things. They may not be, I don't know. But I think there is a trend towards more self-awareness.
Yeah, we went along the way, like you were saying, like painting the picture. We would get different judges too. Like every time we'd get a different judge. And I'm like, but he doesn't know what happened in the last thing. Yep. And so we started putting a cover page of a summary so he could read it. So we would put the pieces together, like you said. Because we learned that really quick that, oh, he's only focused on what we're doing right here. So, but if I put this little cover page on, like, here's what's been happening on the
pre-trial. No, you've got to present the picture. Because, like, here, you get a new judge on the central dock, you get a new judge all the time. And so you're not going to have that back history of knowledge from that one judge, which sometimes good, sometimes bad. But, yeah, it's easier to hide on those types of circumstances.
Yeah, there's so many things that we learned along the way, but...
So it was scary for you? Tell me why scary.
Because I've never been in trouble with the law or, like, never had to go to court. And so... I didn't even know I was supposed to say Your Honor. So I'm like, and Athena's like, say Your Honor. I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what I'm doing. And I don't know. I was sweating profusely. I was shaking. Like when it was, I was just like, I can't do this. It was just scary. I knew his lawyer was going to come for the jugular. And I was anticipating all the lies that they were going to be told about me. And I wasn't sure if the judge, because they don't give it away of what they're thinking. And so not knowing which way they're leaning, I was horrified. I'm like, I can't do this. I'm going to have a meltdown. And maybe it's just my personality too. It was just new, not knowing the process. I didn't know, like, so when he entrapped me in his house and threatened to kill Athena, that went into the DA getting involved. And I didn't know, like, what is this pretrial? I didn't know the steps that we're going to trial. So like they kept saying, you have to come to pretrial. And I'm like, what are we doing? Like, what's, I didn't know, like, no one's telling me the process of what the DA is thinking, what the charges are for. Do I have to testify? Oh my God. And it was just scary, the whole thing.
You know, I forget because I live and breathe in the courtroom that it's not scary for me. It's like home for me. But you forget that for regular litigants, I mean, it's terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's in their suits and there's processes and everyone's knows what's happening. And you're like, I don't know what's happening. And no one tells you what the how the law works. Like, you can't submit this or that's not. Why not? Like, and then here's me. This is so silly. I didn't know this. I'm like, well, why do they have to see what we're going to turn into court? Because then they're going to know. And he's like, you can't ambush him. And I was like, but yeah, but I know he's going to do this if they know that we have this. And I didn't understand the whole, like, you have to show your evidence to them. And
yep.
I was like, great. Now he's going to know.
You saw my poker hand? Why? Yeah. That's not fair.
Yeah. It was such a learning process for me. I had no idea what was happening, but. I feel like everyone needs to kind of know, though. It was very, especially when it's not my case. I'm very into it, but when it's my case, I'm like, oh my gosh. And just that anticipation of what his lawyer's turning in that was fake. I'm like, do they know that they're turning in fake things? Oh my God. It was just wild. I mean, they come for you. Like, his defense lawyer will come for you.
They do.
And it's just like surreal moment of this is not the movies. This is not TV. This is actually happening. And they're coming for me. Like, I'm the worst human being ever on this earth.
Yeah. That's what I will tell clients. I'm like, you have the truth on your side. Just remember that. And it's hard though. I mean, it's difficult because they're on that witness stand and they want to defend themselves. They want to say, that's not true. They want to say, nah, they want to say he's the bad guy. Call him the bad guy. But you're never going to get the court to say as a general rule, he's the bad guy or she's the bad guy or girl. You're never going to get your sense of vindication as a general rule that you feel you're owed. Like, you are going to walk away not made whole. And if you're going to court to be made whole, it's just not going to happen. Like, you're going to walk away even more disappointed.
Yeah. So reactive abuse is a thing. Mm-hmm. And so during court, I had said some pretty awful things via text message. And let me tell you, it's the most humbling thing sitting there going, I wrote that. Oh God, I wrote that. Ugh. Like, you're just sitting there. It's like, I do sound awful. I do sound awful right now, but this is not the whole picture. Oh my gosh. But you're sitting there going, wow.
Like, you're like, oh, I sound awful.
No,
I've read back from my text messages, even to my ex. I'm like, I hope these don't see
fire. I was on fire. But you never think that your text message is going to be in court ever, or that someone's going to be reading it in front of your face as you're sitting there. So it's awful.
No, it is one of our favorites as attorneys, or it's one of my favorites. I can't think of all attorneys, but it's one of my favorites to have an opposing party read their terrible messages into the record. It's very effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
like, did you mean that? Well, what did you mean when you called her? See you next Tuesday.
Yeah.
What did you mean when you did this? And oh, they don't like those questions.
Never. Oh my gosh.
I enjoy asking them though.
Did he have any clue what he unleashed between you and Athena?
Right.
No, I think it really blindsided him. We're very similar, but we're very opposite as well. So everything I excelled at, she didn't, and vice versa. So putting us together, he couldn't win using his normal tactics.
Yeah. He'd learn new tricks.
Do the same things that he was doing before, but we knew about them and we would empower each other. Like, if he would try to stick a wedge in between us, like he was trying to split us apart and make sure that we got mad at each other again. We were like, no. He's doing this to try to make us be mad at each other so we don't do the podcast, we don't continue our mission. So we were one step ahead of him. Yeah, and I just don't think he thought we were going to do a podcast, out his real name, and then just the snowball effect after that.
I mean, what did he expect? I mean, you can only do so much damage.
To this day, he still has some supporters that don't believe us, even though we have so much documentation. And he's like literally saying the attack footage from the docuseries was AI generated now. So there's a certain segment.
This is a deep fake.
Yes. Believing him saying that was all AI generated. So he doesn't stop.
I've actually tried a case. It wasn't AI generated. She said it was a deep fake. So we hired body doubles to stand in for her daughter in pictures. But I did a 2-week jury trial on that. I'm like, yeah, it's not a deep fake. I'm like, I hate to break it to you. This is true. This is real. This is a real picture. They just didn't like what the real picture painted. So I'm guessing he didn't like it either.
No. And I think another thing that tripped him up is that I feel like the court systems haven't caught up to digital transformation. So he would just screenshot fake text messages that he would turn them into court. And we were able to prove through all of the women coming together saying, this is not my phone number. This is my, and so we really just painted a picture. So I don't think he was expecting that either of, ooh.
Wait, how many women total?
Oh, there's hundreds of them over a 20-year span. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But we all have similar messages, but he would even create emails, and which scares me because he made a fake email address for Athena, like a Yahoo, using her real name. So if you don't claim your name, someone could literally open an email for you and claim to be you. So he did the same for her husband, and he was communicating as them. And then she had to pretend, like, not pretend, but she had to go in front of everyone and be like, that is not my email. That never came from me. That is not my IP address that sent this. And like, it's just a whole can of worms.
I will agree with you. The courts have not caught up to, like, because now on cases we've got, and they're not the spamming messages, but you can download basically any app program you want from the app store and get a free number and send messages from that free number until you use that free number up or whatever it is. I mean, it's... Yeah,
that's what Brandon did. Yep.
Yeah.
They would be like, why are you still communicating with him? And we'd be like, you can't not. He will just continue to create new phone numbers to reach out to you. So it doesn't matter if you block, it's just incessantly reaching out. And you're right. There's just always a new technological advancement where it helps them.
Side note. For those of you that are not as technologically savvy, because I know I'm not, people use AirPods to track you. Just keep that in mind. They'll drop AirPods in your car that are attached to their account so they can follow you. Just as an FYI.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. That's scary.
It's happening in divorces stuff, but... a lot now. Oh, AirTags.
Yeah.
It's AirPods. Oh, they accidentally left the AirPod case in the car. Oh, yeah.
Well, another thing that we discovered, and this is not new, but something we didn't think about, was if you've ever shared your calendar with your spouse or your partner and then forget that you shared it. So he would know when we had meetings with our attorney, if we had court dates, anything personal on our calendar, he knew exactly. And I forgot that I had shared my calendar. And so it took a while for us to figure out, like, how does he know this? I don't understand. And then we're like, oh my God, check your calendar.
Well, they do that. And then Google Photos. You forget that you've got like the shared family drive on Google Photos. Mm-hmm. And I've had clients that have been busted with affairs because of Google Photos, because they forget it uploads automatically to the family cloud.
Yeah. Or even like we have an Amazon, what is that thing? I got gifted it. Amazon Echo or Amazon. It's like a thing on our kitchen, but it's attached to your stuff. So
I have one too, and it's like a big screen. Well, yeah, relatively big.
Screen, yes.
Yeah.
But like I have everything. One too.
Everything.
Yeah, if you don't want to get caught cheating, watch
don't
out.
Don't cheat.
Yeah. Don't do it.
As a member, it's just an involuntary muscle spasm.
That's right. Do you want to explain to people? This is our pre-conversation before we started working.
Yeah, yeah. See, Amber's really good at understanding out of context. Michelle, you're not going to pull one over on Amber and get her to say a nasty soundbite that we can recut.
Damn
Sorry.
It.
She's a pro.
Damn it.
Sorry.
I tried.
She can pull that shit on people who have never been on a podcast, never podcasted, but Amber is a little bit too savvy when it comes to stuff. Sorry.
I know. Well, remember that for next time. So, Amber, what was your biggest takeaway from your breakup with your ex?
Oh, God, there are so many. It's hard because once you unpack everything, because hindsight, it sucks. It is 2020. You get it. Mm-hmm. You see it. And then you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of self-reflection that happened. And it wasn't, he did this to me. It's how did I get myself there to begin with. I wasn't beating myself up, but I was like, there's a lot of self-reflection that needs to happen, because how in the world did who, like I was mentioning, I grew up in a pretty normal, stable environment. How in the heck did I wind up walking into a marriage with a monster? And there was so many things that kind of led up from how we met to making impulsive decisions and moving in and getting engaged really quickly. That was pretty bad. And that was kind of one of those pivotal moments, had I not done that.
Whose request was it to get engaged quickly?
His. So he proposed, and it was one of those that you look back going, things might have turned out so differently. But we met on Tinder when it first came out. So before it had any kind of stigma to it, it was back in 2013. And I was told it was a networking app, but obviously quickly realized it was a dating app, but whatever. But I was visiting a friend in Seattle, and I opened the app so it tracks you. But I didn't know that back then. So I'm swiping all whatever, the way where you're liking everybody. And so that's how we kind of connected. And then we just texted. He reached out. He was one of the guys. And we were just texting for probably a month. And then I went up to Seattle to visit him. But he was telling me from the very beginning that I was planning on moving to Oregon. Anyways, I have this job opportunity with Nike, which is very close to where I live in Hillsborough. And so it started always that he was already planning to move there, and he was in this interviewing process. So we started dating, and I thought, oh, well, that's great. Like, maybe this is all meant to be. This is great. And he's a great guy, and we're dating long distance. And then he throws out the engagement thing 6 weeks after meeting in person. So we had actually talked for a month prior to that. And then from the time we met in November to the first week in January is when he proposed. And I remember thinking it was public. And the first thought was, my parents are going to kill me. Oh God, like they're going to kill me. This is really fast and it's public and I couldn't say no. But then my brain was just saying, you know what? We don't have to get married right away. This could just be a long engagement and he's moving to Oregon. But then it's like, I have a daughter, I have a 4-year-old daughter. And then it wore on me that, wow, he's going to leave his daughter and I can't have that on my conscience. So this ex-wife can't be that bad, because he told me, like, I'd rather just leave my daughter and not have rights to her anymore than having to co-parent one more day. She is beyond awful. And I'm like, she can't be that bad. Oh my God. So I'm the one that said, you know what? I don't have any ties here. I'm just a state away. I will see if I can start finding a job and I will move up there. So that was that pivotal moment of a bad decision, that once you're up there, it's not like you can just turn around and come back. Now I have a new job. Now I don't necessarily have a big savings. So even if I wanted to get out, get a different apartment or whatever, I got myself stuck there. But I've always, I'm not scared to make decisions, but I always had this, like, if it doesn't work out, then I'll just pivot. This was the only time that it was not that way at all. So that was where I was like, oh, this is easy to get out of this. Once I moved, once I've changed jobs, I just thought, yeah, YOLO, here we go, let's do this. And I actually do like a very quick decision. I'm emotional driven, but I do have that side of me as well. I do have this like measured side, like I was mentioning, like, okay, well, we don't have to get married right away. We'll get engaged and this is fun. And if I don't like it up there or something happens, I'll just move home. But then you realize, oh my God, there's a child involved. I'm broke. Now I'm emotionally involved. I got to find a job back in Oregon. Okay, this is not quite as easy as what my brain made it out to be.
Basically, when he landed in your life, where were you emotionally and romantically? What had you been through up to that point? And what did he bring to you that you were lacking up to that time?
So here's the self-awareness part, that back then I was not. Now that I'm getting older and I've gone through all the crud, now I see it. But I was not self-aware of why I was making the choices that I was making. And I was always, how do I extract, just chasing the unavailable emotional man, the one that was hard to get, the one that—
The asshole factor.
Yes, the bad guy. The hot bad guy, still, he was the one. If I had so many people in my 20s and 30s, like, they would have been great boyfriends. But the minute they paid me attention, I was like, yeah, too much. Run for the hills.
Every woman does it.
Yes. I would get the ick and I would run. And then I would focus, hyper focus on the guy that was like barely giving me a crumb, like barely dangling me a carrot. And that's the one that I wanted. And what I didn't realize is I kind of had daddy issues, even though I had two parents that were married. He wasn't very involved. And so it was just me and my mom and my sister. She kind of raised us. My dad was just kind of hands off. You guys go do your thing. So I think it was a way of like winning his attention. I need to win a man's attention to feel loved, to feel needed, to feel special. Because my dad, I don't think he meant to do it that way. But I think for whatever reason, I took it as like, I have to have straight A's. I have to be perfect. I have to be to get someone's attention to say I matter. So in a way, like if guys gave it to me easy, it didn't feel comfortable. But if they didn't give it to me easy, I wanted that. I wanted to prove to them that I was the most specialist person, that if I could win them, that I must be really amazing. And then when Brandon came along, he did the love bombing thing. And for whatever reason, I remember saying, gosh, I'm 35. I need to get over this cycle of wanting unavailable men. And so my friends are like, you know, maybe Brandon's not your type or whatever, but he's really a green flag kind of guy. He's doing all the wonderful things that he's supposed to be doing, that all men are supposed to treat you well. And I remember like, okay. So I kind of got talked into dating him, even though I wasn't attracted to him. I wasn't really into him. But then he started filling up these buckets that I didn't realize were empty. And that was like, you're incredible. Tell me about yourself. I want to know everything. And he was giving me all these things. And the more he did it, the more I was like, this feels really good. I'm kind of getting addicted to feeling like I matter. And then it was like this vicious cycle that was happening that I didn't even know. So he initially was like the guy that I normally would run away from. But then my friends were like, you need to get it together, Amber. Like, this guy's great. He's giving all the green flags. He's wonderful. He's a good dad. He's got a good job. He's decently good looking. Like, he's everything on paper. Like, give him a chance. And I'm like, okay, I'll give him a chance. And then next thing I knew, I was completely addicted to this love bombing. What I didn't know that it even existed. I didn't know what that word was back then. And then it getcha.
It's a relatively, well, I'll say relatively new, it was a new term for me. I mean, I've done this for a long time, at least relationship stuff. And I don't know that I even really heard love bombing in the vernacular until probably, the last 7 years, maybe? I mean, it really just wasn't a term that we knew. But now if you look back, you're like, oh, yeah, that's love bombing. Makes a whole lot of sense. But it's funny you talk about the daddy issues. And what's interesting is that your parents, they're still married, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so daddy issues just don't come from coming from divorced families. Like, you can still have those same issues, even though your parents remain intact as one, but they really do a number. Cause you look for the men that are unavailable because that's what you've grown up with. Right. And so, you know, that if you're perfect and you get the straight A's, you'll at least get a little bit of attention from dad. Right. Mm-hmm. And you get a little bit of attention. Then it's like, okay, I've got validation. I've got acceptance. And then you're great all of a sudden. And then they ignore you for another however many months until you prove again that, oh, I can get straight A's again. Look, the report cards came out again. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it's a vicious cycle. And you look for it in your men.
Yeah. And you
just that scrap.
I don't know how many people are that self-aware in your 20s and 30s.
Oh, you're not.
I never even thought that I had any issues. I just didn't think it was a me thing at all. I was just like, these guys are assholes and whatnot, but I'm choosing them. And I couldn't see my own part in the puzzle of what was going on.
Yeah, it probably took me. I mean, I think I always joked around I had daddy issues. I did. I still do. It, whatever. I think the older I get, the much less of an issue it is now. But I don't know that I really fully recognize the depths for which it screws you up until probably my 40s.
Yeah.
Jake?
I don't think I have daddy issues, but I proved to be wrong. No, it's interesting bringing up this conversation is that I know a lot of men who have mommy issues, actually. And when you break this down, I think that women get such a bad rap being sort of overly accused of having daddy issues, when I think that a lot of it comes from sort of your own innate self-esteem, your own innate peer pressure, things like that. And I think a lot of the sort of shaping of that, to be fair, a lot of times comes more from your classmates, your friends, you know, what kind of clique that you'd like to be a part of if you're not a part of. And I think the insecurity I see nowadays truthfully, comes a lot less from your parents and a lot more from the internet, to be fair. I think that really is the shaping of the culture now when it comes to inadequacies or the things that you're avoiding or are voids in your pursuit of a relationship than parents. At least that's the trends that I'm seeing.
I could see social media. I'm also realizing now that we're on the social media venture that what people are willing to say, like they call them keyboard warriors, and the people that are truly willing to be nasty, mean, cruel, for what purpose? I don't know. And the sad part is I know it affects a lot of people that do this for a living, right? You see the negative comments. You see the, well, you shouldn't be wearing that. You're not a professional. I get that one all the time. It took until you're older to really just not give two shits what other people say. I mean, it really, for me, it was the, I hit 45 and it's the, I don't give a shit switch. Yeah,
it feels so good too, right? Oh my God. But I can't imagine being a young person and being on the internet and talking or seeing things about it. I got it too. I mean, when the docuseries came out, I went down the hole of TikTok of, because they would post the little 30 seconds and I'd read those comments of like, wow, that second wife sure is an idiot. Like, whoo, she really, and I'm like, oh, ouch, that sucks. But at the same time, like, I don't know this person. You don't even know the whole story.
You don't know the whole story. And I'm like, and you've got two followers. And if you look at yourself in the mirror, those that live in glass houses shouldn't be throwing stones.
Yeah.
You know, we had a guest on last week, actually, Stephen Michelle. And he brought up a really good piece of advice that he quoted from Aaron Rodgers. And basically what Aaron Rodgers said was, do not take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from.
So good.
That but really hits it home.
The internet, though, does play into things, right? Because I remember with Athena, I'll start with myself. Once you know you're in a bad relationship, but then I'm like, I just put it all out on the internet too. I announced my engagement. I put up all the pictures. And I remember looking at those pictures going, I was miserable that day. I was miserable this day. I wanted to paint the picture that everything was great. And then you're even stuck in it farther for, because you don't, your ego is like, I don't want everyone to think that I made a mistake. And how dumb were you to get engaged in 6 weeks? So there's this internet, like, I don't know. I've definitely pared back since this whole thing. I kind of rein in a little bit of my personal life now, because once you just kind of feel pigeonholed. And same with Athena. She's like, I got married. I put all my new pictures up and then I found out he was cheating and then I was going to get divorced. She's like, I left those pictures up because I didn't want people to talk. I didn't want them to be like, oh, third marriage. This is our third marriage down the tubes and, you know, whatnot. So I don't know. The social media aspect definitely plays a part.
The Instagram perfect. It's not perfect, y'all.
You know, Amber, you and I have known each other for a while now. Michelle, we've actually known each other longer than you and I have. I'm sorry to break the news, but
that's all right. I can share. I play well in the sandbox with others.
It's been 4 years, basically, since I've known Amber. And Michelle, I've known you for, feels like 2 weeks, but it's been 20 years.
We're over two now.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. It is. It's 2 years. 2 years.
It's a long-term relationship, Jake, now. It's over two.
Amber, I do want to ask you this, though. Okay, you and I have talked quite a bit when you were processing doing this documentary. Okay, really, because there's one thing about doing a podcast, but there's another thing about putting your story onto a television docuseries so that people can make their informed or uninformed opinions about who you are, your motivation behind things, and unfortunately, oftentimes, why someone got into something, how they got out, and why they stayed or why they did what they did, right? So it puts you in that position where people are sort of second guessing your motives. You are someone that I know who does put a lot of time and energy and focus into certain decisions. Fair enough, right? In terms of this, like you are a very analytical when it comes to processing outcomes of things like that, right? So you got into this relationship and it ended horribly. Okay, and you ended up forming this alliance with Athena, another ex-wife of his at that point. You knew that you were going to be exposed in some capacity, right? What did you not prepare for of how it would feel once you got the story out there on a global level?
It's terrifying. I remember crying to you so many times. I'm like, I just need some advice, Jake. I don't know if I can do this. I panicked for this one. It's kind of similar to when we started the podcast, honestly. you don't know what you don't know until you do it. And so I didn't listen to podcasts before. I didn't think anyone was going to listen. So we start the podcast, and it was that feeling of like, ooh, now everyone's in my business. Oh my God, like worldwide, multiple countries. And it's like, whoa, that's weird. But then I knew, oh gosh, it's still a little podcast. Then you put it on TV and it's even that much bigger. So I was really scared about just the backlash of people putting us down. We had taken a little bit of it with the podcast, but then with that is where I was terrified. And then I kept thinking, okay, no, people will go listen to the podcast to get the full story, because we knew that it was only going to be 3 episodes, which means it's going to be truncated a lot, the whole story. And so that was my fear, is I was going to come across as dumb, an idiot, people who are so smart, and I would never have had this happen to me. And so for the most part, everything's fine. But what I didn't anticipate was like scrolling on social media and all of a sudden seeing my face. And then it's impossible to not start reading the comments. I just thought, oh, whatever. But then it's weird. It's weird. I was on TikTok for XYs doing our stuff. And then I was like, oh, that's me. Oh my gosh. And then you're like, oh, there's like 200 and some comments. And then you're like, what is it? And then I think that was shocking a little bit. But then also there's the other flip side, where we got inundated with emails and wonderful people reaching out and are just like, this is incredible. You guys are so, so strong. So it's like the good and the bad, I guess. So I don't know. It's hard to summarize, but I still live the same life. It's not like people recognize. We did get recognized once. I will say that was the only thing, because people always ask, do people recognize you? I'm like, no, never. I walk my dog out. Like, no one knows who we are. But we went to California to meet Rachel, which is the victim in the show, and Austin, the guy that kind of saved the day and attacked Brandon and stuff. So we were out with coffee and we noticed someone, and Jake, you probably guys notice this in Hollywood, people have their phones out. Athena's like, and we just, 3-4 of the people from the show were like sitting having coffee, and this lady was like across from us with her phone like this. And Athena's like, I think we're getting filmed. And I'm like, what? And she's like, it's like, she's like, we looked over, I was like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever experienced. But I'm sure people who are on TV, it's normal. But for us, that was weird.
I can't even imagine. Jake, you get recorded all the time, don't you?
Just by myself. But, you know, with my own phone. Yes, I do. You know that. I'm a selfie king. But that being said, though, this brings up a really good point, Amber, because I have been involved in a lot of different now friends who have become subjects of true crime documentaries, stories, things like that. More than you'd think, just being in this victim advocacy world. And one of the common things that they bring up that is a problem is how they get pigeonholed as being that person. They almost become a caricature of their story versus them being a living, breathing personality. And so those are sort of those challenges, right, for you in terms of like saying, well, this is just one part of my life. It happens to be the one that most people concentrate on. But as you said before, you're just out there living your life, trying to sort of heal from the pain that you've been through. And part of this is sort of a healing process, but it's also people sort of possessing that narrative and making it their own and trying to, I guess, put themselves inside your world and either saying, I would have done this or I wouldn't have done this. So how does that sort of next level feel when you talk to people and that's the first thing that they bring up? Oh, you're the one from that documentary. Oh, you're this or you're that. And not, you know, Amber, but you're Amber from Don't Date Brandon.
I honestly don't get it very often. Not that much, but I understand what you're saying. There is this weird feeling of like, that's all I'm known for now is making really poor decisions, getting into this crazy situation. I don't mind being known for that either, but I hope people also know there's more to me than that. And I guess the odd part is like, they think they know my whole personality or my thinking process, or that's strange. And we did lay it all out there in the podcast. We cried, we laughed, we didn't leave anything uncovered. So maybe there was stuff we probably shouldn't have said, but because we were so vulnerable, I think people think that they know us and we're like best friends sometimes. And it's kind of strange. It's nice, but I'm like, but they don't really know me either. So it is. And actually we're going to be at CrimeCon this year. It hasn't been announced, but it should be shortly, probably when this comes live, but that'll be the first time meeting people, any fans or whatever. But I don't know. I don't know that my brain's caught up to it. Honestly, Jake, like I don't, I just have my life this over here and the podcast and the docuseries over here and they don't really overlap. Like I feel like probably people do pigeonhole me and I don't realize it either. I'm probably like a little bit oblivious to, oh, she's that girl or whatever. Cause my family don't treat me different. My friends don't treat me different. Nothing's changed really. So I don't, I think I live in a bubble a little bit here in Oregon.
That's kind of nice. Know. It's nice to live in the bubble to not let that part of what you do really affect your day to day, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. And maybe if, I don't know, maybe if I made it more of a focal point, but it's always just been like this little thing that I did. It was just a moment and
it's not so little anymore.
I know. It's kind of growing.
Yeah, like if you have a show made after your story, it's not little.
I know. We actually, I feel like bragging, but we just got told today that we are shortlisted for the, what's it called? The Banff Big Awards and International Awards or something for docuseries for Banff. I've never heard of it, but I was like, I'd like to go to Banff.
Banff is as in Alberta, Canada?
Yeah, there's some
kind of. Have you been?
No, but I want to.
Banff is some of the most beautiful country you will ever see. My uncles used to work for Canadian National Railway, and this is way back in the day. And there's a train stop in Jasper, Alberta, which is in the middle of the Banff National Forest. Stunning. Oh. I remember climbing up a snow-capped mountain like July in there. I mean, it's just go.
I will. It's so it's stunning. In June. I was like, I will definitely go. But it's surreal because you're thinking, wow,
people like it's just me.
Submitted so many amazing, cool docuseries and these two wives, just some, our big old faces are like up there. It's just weird. It's so weird, but I'm honored and like, that's the coolest thing. Like, I don't know. My head hasn't wrapped around it. I don't think yet.
But that's okay. Cause it also makes you, that's part of what makes you, you. Right? It's like you're not, it's not going to your head. It's just like, okay. And you had the unpleasant experience of experiencing that in your life and who wanted that on their bingo card, but you turned it into something so much bigger than just what that relationship was. And so for you to do that for all the people that listen, for all the people that watch, you have impacted their lives in a way that you didn't know you were going to do 10 years ago.
Yeah. And that's
kind of a blessing.
Really cool part. Yeah. We've had a few people emailing and say, I watched your docuseries and I broke up with someone that had been toxic and abusive to me. And that was like that trigger of, I don't want to end up how Rachel ended up in that docuseries. So that was really special. And one of those like, okay, cool. We've done this really amazing thing. Cause sometimes the wheels are turning and you don't really know the effect of what you're doing.
So and it's just not, and you wonder if your message and what you're trying to help achieve is being heard, right? Because like people can listen, but whether you're heard and listened are two different things.
Like you have to kind of tune out the ones that aren't really the target demographic anyways of the story. I can't, there's so many people like fake extensions, fake this, fake that, like they want to focus on our appearance more than the story, and that was disappointing. But then you think,
I'm like, well, I like my extensions. Information,
why does that bother you so much if I got extensions or some Botox because no one wants to go on TV looking your worst. And so, but yeah, it's good to hear when people get the message that was intended versus the ones that are just mean to be mean. And
oh yeah, we had one, Jake and I talked about this one. We actually did an episode on it. It was someone left a podcast review and said, Ozempic and a dye job won't change the horrible person you are, Locke. You're still, I mean, it. Whoever it was, I clearly had cross-examined in court at one point.
Sorry about that,
because they really didn't like me.
I took it down. Sorry.
Oh, you took it down?
Oh. No, thank you for I didn't mean to put that up. It was a late night. Sorry.
Oh, but it was, thanks for taking it down, Jake. I appreciate it. But actually, I think we figured out who it was ultimately.
Yeah.
But I did a whole episode on it. I'm like, why are you crucifying me for... doing what makes me happy. Like, how does that affect your life? I'm like, and if I get Botox, if I get Dysport, if I get filler, why do you give a shit?
Exactly. It's so crazy.
Michelle has one of those rare situations in life where most people feel very comfortable liberating their opinions online, but they would never say this to her face. A former domestic violence court judge, family law attorney. Can you imagine if we invited people to share their opinions? So
yeah,
it's interesting too, because Michelle, you were talking about this in terms of hair extensions and sort of the fashion show-esque situation or runway of documentaries, right? Or like, you know, looking good on camera.
You
right?
have you, to look good.
You have to look good. The thing is that Michelle will do a really important clip about DV or about narcissism, and then somebody will put like, oh my god, that impacts me so much, and then you go like, they're like, that but that blazer though, but those rings though, it's like yeah, it's important message, but damn, this lady knows how to dress. I mean, that's literally what we're getting to at this point. So
it's, no, I had one post the other day that was like, that is an unprofessional top you're wearing, a woman commented. Okay. And so I said, well, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I said, I'm going to continue being me. I love how I look. I love how I feel. And the dress is great. And here's the link to the brand that made the dress.
That is classic.
And then, so then she responded with, I would never hire an attorney that looks so unprofessional. And I said, well, good thing that not every attorney is a right fit for a client. I probably wouldn't be a good fit for you. And then I added something else. I was like, have a fabulous day.
Oh man, that's so hard to take that high road though. I'd be like, let me tell you.
I would put, it'd be nice to have an attorney like me if you could afford me. I'd start there, right?
Yeah.
So I have learned the art form, and it's an art form, to eviscerate while being polite.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to go for the big jab, because I'll make you bleed out with pleases and thank yous.
100%, right?
Why go online and post that? I mean, maybe it affects other people. Quite frankly, it just stokes my fire. I'm like, let's go.
I know. There's something about... It's usually the women, too, that make the worst comments. And I'm like, aren't you supposed to be kind of supporting other women?
No, they're
women?
Awful.
But no, I'm they're like, the worst. And there's something, if uplifting. You try to look good, then that even makes them more on fire. If you try to, if you dumb down yourself a little bit and look a little disheveled, then they're all on board. But if the minute you put some lipstick on and
like the
and
minute you look hot,
highlights, whoo.
Oh, no. Highlights, red lipstick. Little bit of cleavage, well, then you're a whore.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, no.
It's kind of like they're perpetuating exactly what we're talking about. Analyzing my goof-ups.
But you know what? Our goof-ups, like, it is why you are where you are today.
Yeah.
And it's why you're as fabulous as you are today, because you went through that shit. I mean, I look at my stuff and I'm like, yeah, it sucked. But it's, thank God I went through it, because it's great material to talk about.
Right? I know. We wouldn't have anything to talk about.
I'd be completely boring if I didn't have that to talk about.
I know. Being in the age that we are, I won't even say it, like we were talking earlier, is you kind of get to a point where you don't give a fuck anymore. So you're just like, whatever. That was that, and moving on.
Take it,
I don't
leave it.
Well, on it. So
no. And yeah. Then it's love me or hate me. But guess what? No matter what side of that coin you land on, it doesn't really change how I wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
And that,
it's a kind of,
and as a woman, I know how much time did you spend in your late teens and 20s and early 30s worrying about everything that everyone else thought about?
100%. Yeah. There's a book. What was it? How to Not Give Two Fucks or Any Fucks. Or my friend always said, like, you gave too many fucks, Amber, so long. I'm like, I know, and I just don't anymore. And it's so nice. It feels like a weight's been lifted. I'm just like, it doesn't affect me. Whatever you think of me, I don't care. I just don't. It doesn't.
No, but it's like 45. So
yeah.
It's about 45 for women. Jake, do men have an I don't give a fuck switch that gets flipped?
I think they're born that way, to be fair.
Oh.
I hate to say it like that, but I think that we're conditioned to believe that the world is ours. And some people will tell you that's not the case. But, you know, I came from a very high level female raised environment. And I was never emasculated by any sense, but there was a major equality there. men were taught to be gentlemen or hoped to be gentlemen, whereas women had to sort of, I guess you'd say, condition their behavior in order to be a lady, which I think comes with, unfortunately, a level of submission and permission, unfortunately.
No, 100%. I think our personal identity changes as we get older, right? Because as we just talked about, we change, and who our person is at 22, 23, 24, 25 is probably not who our same person would be in our mid-40s. And so what role does personal identity play in choosing the right partner?
And it sucks to say this, but just wisdom as you get older.
No, youth is really wasted on the youth.
If I thought about myself at 18, I thought I knew who I was. I thought I had everything figured out, and I didn't know shit. And so, like, how could I possibly know who I wanted or what I wanted? I was still trying to fit into what people wanted me to be at that age. And so I think if you, maybe it works out for some people, you choose someone and you grow together. But then I think most people probably realize, even if you stay together, I think there's a lot of times they're like, wow, we're two different people with two different wants and needs. So, you know, it just sucks to say, like, age and wisdom and life experience kind of helps you figure out who you are in a relationship and what you want.
And I don't think you can really be in a good relationship until you kind of know more about who you are and what it is that you really want. Because when you're younger, what you really want is, for the most part, nonsense. Like, you're looking for the things you can't take with you.
Was there a time in your life when you were more concerned about attracting the right partner to you? Meaning that you're not the one taking control of it, but you wanted someone else to come in and take control and find you instead of you sort of going out and finding what you want.
I don't know that I was even, I think I thought I was in control. So embarrassing to say, like, I have my little checklist and I thought that I was in control of, like, not you, not you, I want you. Like, I didn't realize that in me with my little checklist that I was trying to fit what they wanted as well.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted, am I the smartest, the prettiest, the this, the that? I wasn't realizing that I was kind of on the other side, just trying to make them want me when I thought that I was like, oh, I only want this, this, and this in my life and whatever. I thought in my young, non-mature self that I thought I was mature and I thought that I was the one in control, but I think it kind of flipped after the divorce with my ex. And I really had to look at myself and unpack, like, where did I go wrong? And wow, you know, I didn't know myself. I didn't know what I want. I was trying to fit all these different things. I actually remember with my ex-husband, they do this mirroring thing when you first kind of meet. And I thought, oh, I remember telling my family, like, oh, he's so much like me. He loves to travel and he likes outdoor stuff. And we have all this in common, but then as soon as I got engaged and moved up to there was no hiking, there was no adventure, there was no travel. And I was like, okay, I guess we don't do that. Like, I didn't do any of that. And I let myself not have those things that I enjoyed. I just accepted that my needs weren't important. And I think then when you go through a bad marriage, a long marriage, all those things, and you realize I can never do that again. And I don't care what I have to do to figure this out, but it needs to be a little bit more me-centered. And so, and I always felt like, oh, that's selfish. If I ask for what I want, that's selfish. Again, it's one of those ingrained things, but I think it wasn't until early 40s, you know, right in this, like, giving two fucks where I'm not selfish if I want these things and they should be doing the things that they need to do for me, not the other way around. It's, I don't know. It's kind of a vicious cycle trying to figure life out, I suppose. What about you, Michelle?
So things for me changed after my divorce because I I'd been through tremendous health crises for the last couple of years of my marriage. And then my personal just kind of went to shit. And I got out and realized that I had truly lost who I was. I didn't do any of the things I enjoyed anymore. It was all about jumping through whatever hoop he needed to make him happy. It was never about what I needed or what. And I don't even know, in all fairness, that I knew what I wanted. back then because I'd been with him since I was 23. And so I didn't know shit at 23. And I, because he was older, let him kind of guide where we went. And that was to my own detriment. And so now I look at relationships and I've slept alone for last couple years and that changed a lot. And then I got my confidence back and Jake's kind of seen this development over the last couple years. The person I was 2 years ago and the person I am today are two vastly different people. I was very much a people pleaser because I figured if I made everyone else around me happy to the exclusion of myself, then I was doing something right, right? And it goes back to what you said, taking care of yourself and putting your needs first is not being selfish. It's just not. And I had to get out of that mindset when it came to being a mom, because when you're a mom, it's your kids come first, your spouse comes first. Everyone comes first but you. And now I've realized if I don't put some of my needs first ahead of my kids, that it doesn't benefit them long term and it makes me miserable, which makes their lives miserable. I wouldn't put up with what I put up with before. I'm probably highly sensitive to red flags, at least the ones that relate to my ex. Anything that relates to him, I'm hypersensitive, hypersensitive. And probably to the extreme where I'm like, nope, no thanks. Like if there's any part of you that reminds me of my ex or any part of you that reminds me of my ex, I'm like, nope, nope. I have found that I have a type. I like law enforcement type people. I like people that kind of wear the white hat. And that I figured out. And I also, and my brother told me this, and I never thought about it this way. But he said, in a spouse or a partner, you always want to find someone that is in the people giving sector. Teachers, law enforcement, medical professionals like nurses, because they constantly give. And they give in their daily life, so that, and they give in their personal life. And so those type of people are really great people to have long-term relationships with. And my brother's married to a teacher. And I got to tell you, when he said that, I was like, I mean, that's pretty fucking smart. I was kind of surprised it came from my little brother.
I think it's about being on a journey of self-discovery and putting your own needs first. And I think that when you grow up, you're sort of conditioned to appease and appeal to anything outward that will give you attention, that will give you sort of something in your life that you're supposedly missing in that way. And in both of your cases, it sounds like it came from how you were conditioned in terms of how, you know, men entered your life, relationships entered your life. And obviously career had been at the forefront, especially, I know this about Michelle, her mom indoctrinated her very early about not depending upon a man. And I think that she didn't financially, but did emotionally, as we all
100%.
Should. Yeah.
100%. My mom, when I was second grade, Miss Henry's class, Vista Hills Elementary. We'll never forget. It was, I think, right after my parents got divorced, and my dad put my mom in a bad financial position. And she, like, grabbed me by my chin and pulled me to look up at her. And she's like, Michelle, she's like, you get an education, and you never depend on a man for anything. As long as I was 8 years old, I'll never forget as long as I live. And it made an impact. And so I did. I got an education. I became a lawyer, did all those things. But emotionally, I was a fucking hot mess. Career-wise, yeah, don't mess with me in my arena. But personally,
yeah,
hot fucking mess. And I think only now am I unwinding it. How long, Amber, after your relationship did it take you to really kind of unwind from that kind of toxicity? Because you had an extra level of toxicity.
I know. And I always say don't do what I did, because I did jump into a relationship very quickly. I think the only caveat to that is that I was emotionally checked out years prior to my divorce. Yeah. Yeah. So I pulled the plug in December 2018, January 2019, somewhere around there. And I met my now current boyfriend, I think it's been 7 years now, in May. But it was a slow, slow thing. It was more just originally like just a distraction. Like I just need to get out there and date and I'll know the red flags if I see it. But it was so slow moving that it didn't give me this scary feeling. I just remember thinking, I'm going to trust my gut. If I get any, I know what that feeling feels like. If he gives me any kind of vibe,
any kind of ick,
I'm out. But it really was, we would just go hiking and go on adventures. And he lived about an hour from me. So it was not like we were overseeing each other and we weren't rushing into I love yous. And it was, you know, just weekend fun. We would travel and we would go to all these great national parks. And it was like friendship that evolved. Yeah. And, you know, it took us 4 years before we moved and got a house together. And so it wasn't this fast, expedited type of thing. It was like a slow dipping my toes into it and trusting myself and learning to trust myself. So I always say, don't rush into dating, into something serious, because you should kind of decompress, heal, and figure out and heal. But I think for me, it was just, I had the support of my family and my friends, and I was kind of in this place where I was ready to dip my toes slowly into it. I just was like, and also I'm like, that was the bottom of the barrel. Anyone is any better than what I just went through. Like, there's no way, if there's a God above,
the bar was set so low
my way. Like, I feel like I've checked out all the boxes of the shit that can be thrown at someone in one lifetime. So I was like, the bets are he's got to be pretty decent guy.
Chances are already at the bottom of the barrel.
He's from Iowa. He's a Middle Western guy, farm kid. Like, he's got to be a good one. He can't be like so left field. Like, I just can't imagine that happening. So thankfully it all worked out. And yeah.
Well, 7 years later.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I can't believe time has gone so fast. Everyone I have, you know, girls always talk about the relationships. And what I realize is we've all gone through shit and it's all different shit, but it's all the same kinds of shit. And it's not like, well, yeah, you got cheated on, but mine went to jail and yours, the whatever. It's like, there's, everyone's gone through this, whatever, in their life. We all kind of chose a little bit differently, but I have friends that have gone through stuff, maybe not as wild as mine, but I relate now too, because I don't know, being judged for what I did or didn't do. Now I look at, like, why is she still staying with him? Why is she still married? I remember thinking that years ago, going, why is she still with him then if she hates him so much, or like whatever. Right. But now when you go through it, you're like, oh, there's so many more factors involved for why she's staying. And I have a better understanding of interpersonal relationships, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's come walk a mile in my shoes. Until you've laid in my bed, mm-hmm. you can't. I mean, you can try and judge, but that means nothing, because until you literally have laid in there and know what we have to deal with. And every relationship is different for that. Like, everyone, I agree. We've all been through some shit. We don't get to the age we're at mm-hmm. without have been, like, we have stories. All of us have damage. All of us have, you know, hail damage from some of the storms that we've gone through. It makes us who we are. But it doesn't mean anyone's hail damage is worse or less than someone else's. It's just a different experience. Mm-hmm. And there's some that are much, much worse. Like, yours is pretty awful. But there are some people that don't have quite what you have, but still end up with complex PTSD from it mm-hmm. because of how their personalities react to those types of situations. And so, yeah, I'm the last person to judge.
Yeah, and sometimes I look at people and I was like, please don't compare what you have with what I went through, because right. you're still being abused. You're being right. financially abused. You're being controlled. Don't think he has to be Brandon level before you leave. Please don't lessen what you're going through. I feel like sometimes I see what I have gone through with Athena and our ex-husband, and whoa, that's like really bad. Like, mine doesn't seem that bad. And I've had people make comments of like, man, my relationship's a walk in the park. I'm like, I'm not saying leave your relationship, but don't compare it like, oh, it has to be that level before I leave. Like, if you're not happy, then
do something about it because the happiness isn't going to change.
Think about the emotional stuff too. Like, it's not just physical abuse or cheating. It could just be like someone putting their thumb on you your entire life and controlling you. That's not a good way to live, you know? So
if only it was as simple as whether someone cheated or not. Mm-hmm. And it's just not. I mean, it's just not that simple. And even as Jake and I, you and I talked about another episode, the whole affair and the complexities behind an affair and how you make the relationship work post an affair, if you do, if you don't. I mean, it's to each their own. And the problem that I ran into is because I do this for a living and I see the underbelly of marriages and relationships, I would go home and go, yeah, mine's not so bad.
Yeah.
And then until my therapist said, Michelle, out of all the couples I've dealt with over my career, he said, you and your ex have the second most toxic relationship I've ever seen. He's like, and the first most toxic relationship, they stabbed each other.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh.
No one would ever imagine that Michelle could have been put through what she was put through in her previous marriage. You don't have this sort of POV when you look at Michelle, when you look at her life, and everything's authentic. That's the one thing about Michelle when it comes to imagery, branding, lifestyle, career, is it's authentic. She doesn't have to try. As we all know, Michelle is extra, and it's just something she was born with. It's like maybe she's born with it.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
I was just going to say that. Maybelline.
We're trying to get a sponsor here.
No, but Maybelline, by the way, does make, I don't wear much Maybelline, yeah, except for their Great Lash Mascara, which has been a go-to mascara for.
Pink tube one?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That one. It is a, okay, y'all, I remember, and this is going to make you laugh, maybe not Jake so much, but Amber will. I used to stuff my bras.
Oh, that was a thing.
That was, okay, see, wait, you see Jake's face?
You, yes. Every other conversation, we had a conversation, Amber, with somebody the other day, and they were talking about you get to a certain age, you need like breast enhancement, and Michelle stops the, she's like, stop, hold the press, stop the presses. That's one department I do not need help in. It was the funniest thing. She's like, lady, I'll agree with you on a lot of things, but that... Oh. That's all my own. I got plenty for you, me, and then anybody else who comes on the show.
Okay. I think Jake, I've told you this. I used to come home crying that I was flat-chested. I would cry because all my little friends had the training bras on, and I didn't have anything to train. And so it wasn't until like eighth grade where the inflate button got hit.
This is like the movie Big. You must have prayed to Zoltar or something like that.
Well, I did because I also wore a headgear to school for sixth grade.
Oh, dang. See, Now we're unpacking why we are the way we are, right? We're getting down to the nitty gritty of how we ended up.
Oh, my God. What is this?
Where the train wreck really started.
I'm going to have to share some of those pictures because I had glasses from kindergarten on, but I had the big 80s plastic frames. And then I thought I was really cool, and I don't know why my mother let me do this, but she did, God bless her. I had the tint, and so they went from like light purple to pink, and they were like this, and then I had this, and then my teeth were like this.
You ever seen the movie Weapons?
Post-traumatic stress syndrome on both of us. That's why we ended up this way. Yeah.
That's why Jake's like, you have no idea when a man's hitting on you. I'm like, I don't. Because I
remember what we used to be.
That wore the headgear to school in sixth grade in Miss Clark's class. And sad part is I thought I looked cool.
Michelle was like Blossom.
Well, moments.
I was like Blossom. I totally identified as Blossom as a kid. But then I also identified as Debbie Gibson from Electric Youth because I wanted that fucking hat.
Oh, my God, yes.
Remember the hat that Debbie wore?
Yeah, I think so.
I had the perfume and the Electric Youth.
Oh, my God, I love it. Oh, wait, Amber was a huge New Kids on the Block.
I was a New Kids on the Block. Oh, my gosh.
Amber was New Kids all the way.
NKOTB.
That's right.
That was long before the NSYNC days, boys. It was...
Jordan Knight. Amber Knight. That's what it was. For
me, it was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Good Vibrations. Show me some Good Vibrations.
Oh, my God. Michelle had the Marky Mark Calvin Klein underwear ad painted on her door. It wasn't the poster.
What teenage girl wouldn't? Well, Marky Mark with the Calvins and the jeans and the underwear and the abs. And then you add in his, like, thug persona at the time. He was a bad boy.
Michelle loves the bad boys.
I do like bad boys. They're trouble, but I do like the bad
problem,
boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all problems.
But ladies, have we learned anything?
Yeah, maybe that's no. What the next episode needs to be is let's talk about Michelle and the youth, and then talk about, yeah, like the Marky Marks. Like that's what we visualize. It's like one day, like our pop stars, like what we fantasize about, and what is it that actually like perpetuating as adults?
I used to think Steven Tyler was hot.
He is. Yeah.
80s. I look back now and I'm like, no, but man, back in the day, Steven Tyler was hot. Yeah. Axl Rose.
Oh, yeah.
When he had Paradise City, those white leather pants and the leather jacket.
Brett Michaels. Hello.
This goes against what Michelle likes body type, because these are both, for lack of a better term, string bean style men.
I know. And
Michelle likes, Michelle likes like lumberjack-esque.
I like tall. I want to feel like I can hide behind you and like actually be hidden.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Michelle's type.
6'3", 6'4".
I'm very primitive. Maybe a little of a knuckle dragger.
You or your mates?
It just depends. Let's talk about Amber's show, The Next Realm.
Let's do that. This is more of a lighthearted podcast, so I shifted gears after that big old train wreck that is Ex-Wives Undercover. So, gosh, it's been over a year now, but I started the podcast called Next Realm. It was really a spiritual awakening, if you will, when my nephew had passed and he was just sending all these incredible signs. And so, yeah, I was like, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the woo. Let's make it a little bit not where we have to be like, I had this thing happen to me. Promise me you don't think I'm crazy and blah, blah, blah. So, because I feel like once I start talking about my experiences, all my friends had experiences. My family had experiences. I'm like, how come I've never talked about it? But it's like this... like unspoken woo that
yeah they don't want to think y'all people think you're crazy. I'm like, it's yes, not crazy people. Exactly.
Yeah, so it started as just a fun little hobby thing in addition to Ex-Wives. I didn't have a ton of time to put into it, but now that we're kind of on a little bit of a hiatus, I'm refocusing. I just interviewed Gabby Petito's mothers, and so they came on to talk about all the spiritual signs that Gabby has sent since she's passed.
Oh,
so I'm really excited to kind of get started with season two. And it's just a nice uplifting type, not as heavy. It can be heavy, obviously, when people pass, but the beautiful ways that they've come back, it does kind of give you some good feels.
Good feels are nice, especially in today's world when we don't get enough of them.
Yeah.
Jake, you've had an experience, haven't you? Because you went on with the, Amber.
Yeah, Amber invited me on the show, and it was really a transformative experience. I think what Amber does that I found really just heartwarming is she kind of unlocks certain things in yourself and in your experiences that you're not even aware of. She makes you feel very comfortable and very safe. There were things for me where I was never a true skeptic, but it took the signs that my late grandmother was sending me in order to facilitate that. And I shared the story with Amber is that the night before she passed, she basically said goodbye to me in a dream, and I woke up the next day and she had passed. And then I had made a commitment to her to transfer one of my college videos because I was a film major, and I didn't do it. And she went to show her friend. Her friend passed away, so I was really sad when she was in the assisted living facility. And then literally the name of the funeral parlor that she was in was the name of the actual project.
I think I have one of your... video. One of your movies, Jake.
Hang Are we going to play a clip now?
Hang on.
I have no clue what this is, Amber. Like,
I don't either.
One of my videos. Oh, yes. Yes.
I think this is it, correct?
That is the first film that I produced, actually, Journey to Lhasa, 2004. Yeah. My grandmother watched that more than anybody on earth.
Jake, you, and you think I don't care.
Amber, how would you take someone like her and get her to a point where she would start to look at her life a little more, let's say, analytically about some of the spiritual experiences that she's had and start to recognize those?
Oh.
Dude, well, my dad came to see me. He floated over my bed, and I've had a very strange relationship with him. But shortly after he passed, he visited me.
Are you just more skeptical about it?
Oh, God, no.
Are they real or if they're...
No. My belief is one, there's an afterlife. One, there is heaven and hell. There's also purgatory. I think it would be very narrow-minded of us to think that there's nothing else out there. It's kind of like there's got to be aliens, because it'd be really arrogant of us to think we're the only, and I'll put this loosely, highly intelligent life forms.
I don't really have a format, honestly. Like, when I started with you, Jake, it was kind of like one person, and then this happened, and it kind of was this way. But since then, it's kind of like, let me hear about everything. So usually I'll just say, give me some experiences, but we usually will talk through it. You know what I mean? So it doesn't have to be, oh, it's just my grandpa died, and we talk about grandpa, and then he passed, and then these are the signs. But a lot of people, it's like, I have a lot of different things. I have a ton of different things. So sometimes we'll just take it from that area of just, okay, give me your top five. Whoa, these were whoa moments. And talk about the woo. Like, were you not into the woo before these happened? Was your analytical mind saying, no, that's just a coincidence?
Oh, I've always believed in the woo, always. Yeah.
But some people aren't. And then they'll see a sign and they'll be like, I think it was just faulty wiring, or, you know what I mean? Or it has to be like right in your face for it to be like yours, like the name of the parlor boys. People will be like, oh, I don't know, maybe such and such was a coincidence, but you're like, no, that's the name of my movie. Like, that is literally, like, there's no way you could say that wasn't grandma that came through.
You bring up, and you have a great memory, by the way, you bring up really good points, because those were two things that were undeniable. I could transfer those to Pete, like the dream part. And people know me, I'm not a bullshitter. I don't make stuff up. I'm
Says
not,
who?
Well, to you, you have to, because, you know, give you the truth and look what you'll do with it.
But I know, right?
I'm aware. It's not good. Not never good. But that being said, is that you know, when you put that unmistakable truth, but then you'll find people who have the inability to communicate it in a palatable, clear, direct sense. And so what you do is you take a lot of these experiences and give people the platform to do so.
Yep.
And they explore along the way too. I think Michelle would do that. I'm not necessarily trying to set up Michelle as a guest, but if you're so inclined, I think that she would have a lot to share, and I would love to see what you, Amber, as a storyteller and a creator, would do with all Michelle's collective spiritual experiences. I think that would be a fascinating thing.
I would love that.
I'm a deja vu person. The last 4 days have been nothing but like recurring deja vu all day. It's the bizarrest thing. And I'm just saying, okay, at some point it'll make sense. It's not making sense right now, but it's some crazy deja vu. But yeah, no, I've always believed in the woo. Yeah, the woo is real.
On the show, I want to hear it. I think it would be great.
I would love to see that. That'd be a magical
If you're open
episode.
To it.
Oh, I'm open to it. But then we can talk about how I have like dreams that are so, like, I dream every single night. Mm-hmm. There's not a single night that goes by that I don't dream. I talk in my sleep. I have arguments in my sleep. Yeah.
Do you have a gavel? I know. Do you have a gavel in your sleep?
No, listen. Sleeping next to me, there should be a warning sign, because you never know what's going to come out of my mouth. And I'm dead asleep.
Oh, my God.
You know, the problem is Amber rocks. And so
she
it's
does.
Easy to rock.
She's
it's like
fun.
We're just hanging out.
She's awesome.
Thank you so much, Amber, for joining us. I enjoy every time we talk. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Love, Lust, Law. Want to reach out and find out more about what's going on with me and or Cosmo, who's making his appearance? You can follow me on all social media platforms at Attorney Michelle Locke. You can also email me at hello@michellelocke.com. Just remember, Michelle is with one L, and you can thank my mother, Margot, with no T for that. Have a great one.